The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case number 5 from the Gateless Gate Collection. The priest Xiang Yin said, "It's as though you are up in a tree, hanging from a branch with your teeth. Your hands and feet can't touch any branch. Someone appears beneath the tree and asks, 'What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?' If you do not answer, you evade your responsibility. If you do answer, you lose your life. What do you do?" And Wu Men's comment, "Even if your eloquence flows like a river, it is all in vain. Even if you can expound cogently upon the whole body of Buddhist literature, that too is useless. If you can respond to this dilemma properly, you give life to those who have been dead and kill those who have been alive. If you can't respond, you must wait and ask Maitreya about it." And Wu Men's verse, "Xiang Yin is just blabbing nonsense. His poisonous intentions are limitless. He stops up the monks' mouths, making his whole body a demon eye." So this koan is one that's very well known in Zen. It's well known partly because it comes early in the Gateless Gate collection, which is one of the collections we use in our koan curriculum. And it presents a dilemma which I've been thinking about a lot recently myself, the dilemma of how it is to be a human being in a world full of suffering, how that world full of suffering can become so personal, how it can touch our hearts so deeply, whether it's about our own particular suffering in this body, heart, and mind, or the suffering that surrounds us in this world full of famines and pandemics and wars and cruelty. How do we respond? In the koan, Xiang Yin, who I'll talk about in a minute, presents us with a very particular dilemma, a no way out kind of situation. And I don't know about you, but I often feel like there's no way out of certain situations. Sometimes things happen that are disturbing, difficult. And if I say something, it could be just the wrong thing. But if I stay silent, that could also be the wrong thing. What to do? How do we actualize our Zen practice in the world? How do we take what we learn in the silence and stillness of our formal Zen practice and actualize it as words and actions that bring healing to a troubled world? In the story that Xiang Yin brings us, he talks about someone who is up in a high tree. In some of the translations I've looked at, people add, I'm sure it wasn't in the original Chinese, they add that this is a very, very tall tree, just to emphasize how impossible it is. And we're holding on for dear life with our jaw clenched around a branch. And there's nowhere that our hands can grasp onto any other branch and nowhere that our feet can touch any other branch. The only way that we can survive is by holding on tight. And this suggests the question, what are we holding on to? Well, I know for myself, and I suspect it might be true for you, that we're holding on tightly to what we think is the thing that will help us survive. We hold on tightly to that branch, and we hold on with our teeth because that's all we know. This holding on tight is the opposite of what we're taught. Uchiyama Roshi's beautiful phrase, opening the hand of thought, letting things be. Shunryu Suzuki's wonderful instruction to give your sheep a bigger pasture to graze in. This opening, opening, opening to what is here. We hear this all the time. Opening to the terrible things and the beautiful things. But here, if we open, it's not so great. If the tree is indeed a very, very tall tree, then we will fall to our deaths if we unclench the jaw that holds so tightly to our ideas and our theories and our views that prevent us from seeing the world as it is. And just to make things even more complicated, somebody stands at the bottom of the tree and looks up at us and asks us for our help. The phrase, why did Bodhidharma come from the West, is a cliche phrase in Zen, you might say. It's a stand-in for the great question that all of us have. What is going on? What is the meaning of this? What is the reason that our ancestor Bodhidharma, who came from India to China to bring Zen to China and started this whole mess that we're involved in right now. Why did he come? What brought him from the West to the East? And you might even ask, why is the sky blue? Why is the grass green? Why do human beings suffer? What is going on? Answer, answer, and give me some guidance so that I can understand. And looking into Xiang Yan's biography, we can see a little bit where he's coming from to set up this quandary for his students. What do you do when someone asks you with great sincerity for an explanation? Well, he was a person who asked his teachers with great sincerity for explanations. We don't know all that much about him, but there are some stories attached to his name that are quite famous. We know when he died. He died at the very end of the 9th century. He studied with some great Zen masters. There are lots of stories about his teachers. His first teacher was Bai Zhang. You may be familiar with the story about Bai Zhang and the fox, and there are lots and lots of stories about Bai Zhang. He said a day without work is a day without eating. He was one of the people who was responsible for creating a lot of the customs and forms that we still, in our own 21st century adaptation, follow. He made Zen Zen. And he was a brilliant teacher who lived with many people on a mountain where his monastery was, and he had many Dharma heirs. But Xiang Yan wasn't one of them. Xiang Yan didn't understand Bai Zhang's teachings. And Bai Zhang died before he developed any kind of insight into the great matter. This is a little bit of a common story in these stories that we tell to explain Zen. The people who don't get it, like Ananda, who studied with the Buddha, but never got it while the Buddha was alive, never understood the meaning of reality. Ananda had lots of wonderful attributes. He had a great memory, and he memorized all the Buddhist teachings, and every Buddhist sutra begins, "Thus have I heard," which is Ananda speaking. But it wasn't until he studied with the Buddha's Dharma heir, Mahakashapa, that he himself had an awakening. And a similar thing happened with Xiangyan. He went to study with Guishan, another famous teacher of the time. And when he came to Guishan with great sincerity, he explained to him that he knew a lot about Buddhism and he had listened carefully to all of Baijiang's teachings, but he'd never quite understood what the whole thing was about. And Guishan was very kind to him. He kept asking him pointed questions, questions that we've heard in other stories. Particularly, who are you before your mother and father were born? Guishan asked Xiangyan. And Xiangyan was a great scholar and a very bright person. And so he did what people have done over the centuries and what we still do and what many of us, because of our training, our schooling, still do. He went to read as much as he could of the sutras of the Buddha and the teachings of the Mahayana. He read and studied and looked everywhere for the answer to Guishan's question. Who are you before your mother and father were born? And he couldn't find the answer anywhere. So he came back to his teacher, Guishan, his second teacher, and he said, I can't find the answer to your question in any of the books that I've read, any of the sutras I've studied, any of the texts that are in our library here at the monastery. Nothing seems to show me the way. And Guishan said, don't give up. Keep going, which is, of course, what we say. Don't give up. Keep going. Get to where you are stuck. Get to the great iron wall where it seems like there's no way through, and keep going. And Xiangyan did just that. But what he did, of course, is what we all do. He headed in a direction that wasn't going to help him. He studied harder. He got to know everything he could about Buddhism and Zen, and still the answer didn't come to him. And Guishan, when he went back again and again and again, kept saying, keep looking, keep looking. This was the Buddha's original teaching. The Buddha said, come and see. He didn't say it's like this or it's like that or study this or study that. He said, come and see. And Guishan said, keep looking. Don't give up. But Xiangyan did give up. And this is one of the places where his biography touches me. The feeling of wanting to give up is so familiar to me. When things get so hard, when it seems impossible, when I'm stuck up in a tree hanging by my teeth, the pain of that, the impossibility of it, there's a part of me that just says, I can't do it. I can't do it. And so Xiangyan is our great Zen ancestor who gave up. He obeyed that inner voice and he said, it's impossible. And he went to his teacher, Guishan, and he said, I quit. I can't do it. I'm leaving. None of this stuff that I've been studying has helped me. He coined the phrase, which has echoed down through the years, a painting of a cake can't satisfy hunger. Of course, years later, Dogen said, a painting of a cake can satisfy hunger because there is nothing that isn't the teaching of the Buddha Dharma. But Xiangyan was stuck, as so many of us are, in right and wrong, good and bad, enlightened and not enlightened, the Buddha nature and the not Buddha nature. And so his divided heart gave up in despair. And he went to a place far away from Guishan's monastery, where the national teacher of China, who had died a couple of hundred years earlier, had been buried, and where there was a stupa dedicated to him. And he made it his business to no longer be a student of the way. At least this is what he said to himself. And he took care of this little stupa, this little mausoleum where this great teacher from the past had been buried. And he swept the garden around the courtyard. He took care of the plants and the trees. Instead of dedicating himself the way he had for years to the study of the words of the ancestors, he simply took care of one ancestor's space. And you may know this story because it's a famous story. One day, in this place where he wasn't seeking anything, just sweeping, he swept up a little stone and it hit some bamboo that was growing in the garden, and the hollow bamboo and the stone together made a sound, just tap. And suddenly, he had an insight. He understood everything that his teachers had been trying to teach him. When he first left Guishan, he had begged Guishan to give him the answers. Explain it to me. Tell me. And Guishan had said, it's not my business to explain it to you. You have to find out for yourself. And in this moment, when he heard the little pebble on the bamboo, Xiang Yan did understand for himself. I can't explain what he understood in this Dharma talk any more than I can explain what the Buddha saw when he first glimpsed the morning star after his night of sitting in formal practice. These little moments, as Hakuin calls them, that make you dance. These little moments where there's a release. And oh, they happen by accident, as we like to say. And Zen practice makes us accident prone. And the practice that Xiang Yan was doing, this utter devotion to the tending and sweeping and the abandonment of the trying to figure it out, it prepared him in some way for this little moment of talk. And the story goes that he bathed himself and he made bows in the direction of Guishan, and then he composed a poem and he came back and he read his poem to Guishan, and Guishan was happy to see him but said, no, your poem doesn't have any insight in it. Keep sitting, keep working, which is great in a way, because we think, oh, he had his enlightenment, the little moment of the pebble on the bamboo. But there's a longer story that follows this one where Guishan keeps going and going and going and comes up with more poems and more poems and more poems, and they're all rejected by Guishan. Until at a certain point, he gives up even trying to prove something through his poetry and is just present with his teacher, and his teacher says, yes, now you understand. So let's go back to that being up in a tree. Xiang Yan knew what it felt like. We all know what it feels like to be doing the impossible and to give up. But something inside of us never gives up. Once we touch this path of Zen, the path of Zen cooperates with our intention to move forward. Just like we talked about last night, the conscious intention to devote ourselves to this great way. This is not time off this weekend. Going on a retreat is not an escape from our life. In fact, it's being thrust even more deeply into the great dilemma of being a human being. Again and again and again, we return to our seat here in the distant temple bell Zendo. We return again and again. We return early and we settle in. How marvelous it is as the screen populates itself. And all of us engaged in some dilemma that's probably different from everyone else's, because human beings have unique personalities and histories, unique ways of expressing ourselves. And yet every one of us has what I might call a hunger to penetrate the dilemma of human life, to find some kind of clarity. This practice is not about getting enlightenment and then saying, I'm done. As Xiang Yan discovered fully, even when he had insights and openings, it was never enough. And he practiced for the rest of his life, as all the great teachers of the past, the present, and the future have done. Wu Men mentions asking Maitreya for help in his commentary on the koan. Maitreya is the Buddha of the future, who will appear billions of years from now when the age of Shakyamuni Buddha of our current time has ended. Unimaginable to think what human beings will be like in billions of years. And yet in Buddhist teachings, there are these ages that begin and end and begin and end, billions of years, and then they're over, and then something else happens. And Wu Men is saying, if you can't figure this out, then ask somebody who's going to be born on this planet in billions of years. And Robert Aitken Roshi, in commenting on this, says, don't wait. Do it now. Sit with all the sincerity you can. Find out for yourself in this very life how to solve the problem of being human, how to solve the problem of being asked a question when your mouth is tightly gripping a tree branch for dear life. The priest Xiang Yan said, it's as though you were up in a tree, hanging from a branch with your teeth. Your hands and feet can't touch any branch. Someone appears beneath the tree and asks, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? If you don't answer, you evade your responsibility. If you do answer, you lose your life. What do you do? Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we will go into our Dharma dialogue. We did say yesterday that the Dharma dialogue is private, but it actually isn't, because we're recording it. So just so you know, if you don't want what you say to be recorded, because it will be published on our website, just ask and we'll turn off, we'll stop the recording for a moment. And otherwise, please come forward, ask questions, be present to what your dilemma is, what it is that you're here for, and anything else that might have been stimulated by the talk, or any questions at all about the Buddha Dharma, about what we're doing here. And let's start with Modu.
Thank you for the talk. And yes, my dilemma usually is that I'm not clear what my dilemma is. It clearly doesn't fall into the category of understanding or not understanding, I feel like, you know. So, and I feel like Xiang Yan was very lucky, like in his case, like he got it pretty quickly that he did not understand. and he gave up, right? So, but for me, I really don't know. The confusion is about, whether I get this or I don't get this, or there is, yeah, so always in the middle of contradiction and not understanding.
Yeah, a wonderful place to be, Madhu. How fortunate for you to be in this place that you can't define. And I think it sounds like no place for your feet to touch or your hands to touch. And so the quality of this dilemma. Right, sometimes very vague and diffuse, like I don't even know what my problem is, right? And of course, the instruction is the same to, of course, we have no choice, but can you choose to be where you are? Can we choose this? And the teaching is that somehow, in a way that doesn't make any sense at all, this is the place. This is the Tushita heaven here. This place of can't quite clarify it. Yeah. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
I just want to add too that, I love how Melissa was talking about this response to the teacher, Huishan, saying, keep going, keep going. It can be a little bit difficult to understand keep going though, because you think, well, I got to go somewhere else. But to keep going is to keep opening up, keep investigating, keep, whereas David said, it's right here, but you've got to keep going.
Yes. Yeah. Thank
Yeah.
you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rich.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. It really pierced my heart. Even though I'm very familiar with this koan, it was the first koan presented when I first started studying Zen before this way. But what you said about bringing it down to a granular level, I thought of situations with my partner, with Tina, where sometimes we're just kind of going at each other. And then we stop because there's nothing left to say. And there's a lot I want to say, but everything I say is going to be wrong. And then not saying anything is also a problem. And at least in that situation, with time, things kind of open up in a mysterious way, but not always. I mean, and not with everybody. So I really appreciated, yeah, the dilemma. It's for me, it's not always solvable.
Right. It's impossible. Yeah. And out of that impossibility comes something
Right.
unexpected, right? I
Right.
think I love you pointing out that moment when you just stop. Because I think that's just what Xiangyan did. And in actually, in working with this koan, that's an important place too, to just, to feel the branch in your mouth and just invite
Yeah.
forward, like Michael was pointing out. It's not about keep going, isn't about going forward to someplace else. It's about really returning to this, oh, it hurts so much, and oh, I'm so scared to die, and I love her so much, and I'm
Right.
so angry right now, and I feel like everything I say and do is wrong, wrong, wrong. That's the place
Right.
it gets to tilt a little, if you can stay with it, if you can really feel the branch in your teeth.
Yeah, the despair. Yeah.
Yeah. Or whatever shape it's in. Yeah, exactly, Rich.
Yeah.
Thank you. Barry.
Thank you for that inspirational talk about the topic of overwhelming forces and dealing with them. I interviewed a Hopi man once whose father was a great advocate for Hopi control over their own resources, their own land. He was up against international coal companies, oil companies, and the US government and he even met with the United Nations a few times. And I said to him towards the end of our conversation, how do you look back on your father's efforts, which had some efficacy, but a lot of it was crushed? And he said he did what he could. And that's kind of what I aspire to, is when I let go of the tree and my teeth let go of the tree and I move into death, I hope my children and my grandchildren will say he did what he could. And I found that Hopi man's simple phrase so inspirational. And that's one response to overwhelming forces.
Yeah, and Barry, I would encourage you not to wait until your death. but here on retreat, there is some possibility in this form for us to do exactly that, right? We can get concerned about the outcome. Well, you know, I'm never going to get it, or, you know, I'm just a beginner, or I've done, but, you know, but how do we just do what we can? And what can we do? We can come back. We can open our heart to this exact place, open our heart to the longing. We can give up and stay right where we are. But this, I love this inspirational opportunity. And it happens at every level. And so here on retreat, we are practicing this, right? With every breath in and every breath out, we can practice just this, and it is of incredible consequence. So no need to wait for our children to talk about us, but to manifest for ourselves, for each other, for all beings, right here.
And also be careful, because it's a little bit of a misunderstanding. In fact, it's a huge misunderstanding to think that the solution to the koan is to let go and die. That's not it. That's a failure, because then you haven't done what's yours to do while you're alive. And that's why it's a dilemma. It seems like there's only two options, but not really. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anne.
Yeah, I again am in left field. Whenever I heard this koan, I think of the guy on the ground and why he's asking this question of someone who can barely hold on. And then I think of the times that I've asked for help from people without paying any attention to what their situation was. I was so involved in my own needs that I just sort of reached out. And I've done that a couple times with bad outcomes. So I think of the guy on the ground that he was ignoring totally what was going on. And the rest of the story is wonderful. But
yeah, I know. But oh man, I love what you're saying, Anne.
And the question from the ground, in a sense, is also a gift to the person up the tree. Right? We could look at it, God, the guy's got it bad enough, or the woman has it hard enough up there in the tree. Why bother her? But somehow this is the something happening in this call and response that moves everything forward. Right?
And we could look also as this guy on the ground as the world. The world is constantly asking us questions. Constantly asking us to step forward and do something in every way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Anne. Corwin.
Thank you, Melissa. I guess this talk really hit me, you know, very deeply. You know, I kind of felt like that guy who's, you know, trying so hard and thinks, oh, I'm never getting this right. And it's kind of an inspiration that he finally, you know, just gave up in despair and said, you know, I'm not going to try. So I'm going to go do this other thing. And it was an accident that brought him enlightenment. And so I think, well, maybe there's a hope for even for an idiot like me. But it also reminded me of the movie Groundhog Day. And I hope I'm not spoiling this for anyone, but I think I'm absolved that the movie's old enough, where the main character just tries so hard every day. He relives the same day over and over and over again. He gets to, just like we do. And he acquires skills that he wants. He learns to play the piano. He gets the girl. And even when he gets it all right, as far as he knows, that doesn't break the cycle. It isn't until he gets past that and finally just lives that finally he wakes up and it's the next day.
That's right.
And so maybe like holding, like letting go of that grasp of what we think is what we need to do is a great reminder. So thank you.
And one of the things that I thank you for bringing that up, Corwin, this relates to the solution that Barry brought forward of just let go and die, right? So in that movie, he dies over and over and over and over and over again. And it's not what he needs to be doing, what you're saying. And I, if you haven't seen this movie, I really recommend that you find it. It must be streaming somewhere. Just to keep giving up in a way, right? Oh, we're having a little echo. I'm gonna mute Barry. There we go. It's so important for this character in the movie to actually die, and then that's not the solution either. It's just like it was important for Xiang Yan to give up, for all of us to give up over and over again in our Zen practice. There's something about the giving up that isn't the solution, but it is something that shows us something. So I think you're on the right track here.
And in this sense, I think dying is also required. Mm-hmm. This giving up is required but it's not a binary thing, not an either or. When we're in the middle of an argument with a friend or coworker or partner, it's not about packing your suitcases and going, but something has to give. And when we hold on and release at the same time in some mysterious way. But as long as we think through our actions, we can be a good enough Zen student, we're going to be limited.
At some point in our practice and in our lives, we come to the realization that life is unfigureoutable. And I don't know if that's a word, but it probably should be. And then that's when we move forward. That's when we see what happens.
Yes, completely.
Yeah.
Thank you. Kevin.
If you let go, not because you're giving up, but because you want to help, it's not the same thing, but it could have the same result.
That you die?
That you run the risk of dying, yeah, unless you land on another branch.
we don't know.
The setup is that you would just die.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So it's the same result, but it's a different intention.
Yeah. Our first Zen teacher used to encourage us not to try to help the world. He used to say, the world doesn't need your help. But the Buddha said, he was asked, how do we become a Buddha? And he said, by saving all beings. Our Bodhisattva vowed to make a difference. We're talking about this. He said, by saving all beings, but if you think that there are any beings outside of you, you are deluded. How can we be of use and not cause more trouble? I do think our intentions are important, although rarely do things go according to our intention. And I think we've all had the experience of, well, let me say something that will be really helpful to you. And sometimes we've just caused much more trouble. So what is it that we have to hold on to and in some ways go beyond below the tree and in the tree, not two separate beings here in some ways. In this koan, we play all the parts. You are the one under the tree. You are the one in the tree. You are the tree. And how do we enter so intimately that we go beyond figuring it out, in a sense? Yeah. Thank you.
So anyone else before we move along to the next part of our morning practice? All right, let's return to our Zazen posture just for a moment, and our practice leaders will take us into the next thing that we'll be doing.